It's time for overtime.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
In the world of sports, it's all about the playmakers in today's headlines, from locals to the pros, with interviews from local standouts and sports all-stars across the country that will have you talking.
Oh, my goodness.
Touchdown.
Hear from coaches to players, sports analysts, and broadcasters who are a part of the action every day. Overtime, now with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Back in the saddle again on a Monday, July 6th edition of Overtime. Welcome back. Hope everybody had a B-E-A beautiful 4th of July holiday weekend celebration and a safe one. But welcome back to the sports show in the Sioux Empire, Overtime with Burt Ramin. And soon on the program, we look back on the weekend, back on this day in sports history, and so much more on this Monday, July 6th edition of the show. We will also refresh your weekend, what you may have missed. I certainly missed a lot. We'll also check in on Major League Baseball as we near the All-Star break coming up soon. Check in there. Look at the odds as the Minnesota Twins are suddenly surging. They have won 6 of their last 7 series after the team was written off largely as a team that was not going to win a lot of series this season. Update you on the Minnesota Twins, a look at the odds and more before we dive into the story that is carrying all sports headlines today, and that is that Team USA and the United States is writing their own rules in the World Cup. We will have Flo Balogun back on the pitch, on the field, coming up tonight in the matchup against Belgium. Incredulous. Doesn't even begin to describe how Belgium is feeling about it. And frankly, UEFA and the broader soccer community not happy with Old Glory and Team USA today. We'll dive into that debate and so much more later on in hour number one. Flo Balogun is a go. Red card suspended. Red card effectively rescinded for the remainder of the World Cup. Is it right? Is it wrong? What does it mean? Is there still an appeal process to be made from Team Belgium? We'll wait and see. Dive into the storylines at the end of the hour. Also updates you on those teams remaining and their odds to win it all at the World Cup here on U.S. soil. That's hour number one. Hour two carried early by your headlines and highlights. Latest from the National Football League as one former notable Green Bay Packer, Rasul Douglas, has a new home in the National Football League. That signing made as of moments ago. NBA free agency. Where does LeBron go? How long does he play there? We rate the spots, landing spots, and the probabilities, and so much more at the end of the show. Free agency latest, commentary on the Jaylen Brown trade, other moves that were made, and so much more before we wrap up the show on this Monday, July 6th edition of the program with the good, the bad, and the ugly. Tomorrow, we'll be chatting with one of Augustana's 2 new head coaches, Colleen Powers, who's going to be heading up the softball program, will be joining us tomorrow in studio. Don't miss that conversation and so much more as we make our way through this first week of July of the show. Let's dive right into the scorecard. We start with those not white hot, but warming Minnesota Twins, who improved to 44-47 yesterday with a 6-1 win against the New York Yankees. But it was not all sunshines and rainbows as the Minnesota Twins got on the board early again, but did not get out of the first without some drama yesterday.
3-2 pitch, Buck goes again, swinging miss, the throw down to second base, not close, Byron slides in. Oh my gosh, they got him on the ankle. The throw was nowhere near the bag, but Volpe, lunging just to try and catch that ball, put his glove on the back leg of Buxton. It's a strike him out, throw him out, double play, and that snaps a streak of, I think, over 35 consecutive stolen base attempts for Buxton without being caught.
Byron Buxton injured on that play, caught stealing there in the top of the first. Here's manager Derek Shelton on the injury, the latest we have right now.
Yeah, I mean, re-aggravation of the hip. I think it was a situation, you know, after the steal, I mean, he had to go hard on the ball that Weathers knocked down, and then on the second one, it kind of grabbed on him a little bit. So just, you know, it's one of those things where we got to make sure that we stay, you know, we stay out of it.
And again, there's never a good time for an injury, aggravation, re-aggravation. But if there was one, might be with the All-Star break immediately ahead of Byron Buxton and those Twins. All things considered, a 6-1 win yesterday for Minnesota has their record up to 44-47, four games off the lead in the American League Central. The team has won six of their last seven series. Here's manager Derek Shelton on that nice little streak that the Twins own right now.
I think we're playing good baseball, you know, and at the right time, and want to finish strong. We go home, you know, we're in the division with the division leader, or however Chicago and Cleveland are going back and forth. So looking forward to going home and finishing with six strong at home.
You know, there's certain teams in sports when you beat the team, it's not about you. Never really is sometimes. But if you beat the Cowboys in the National Football League, everybody wants to say, oh, that's fine and dandy. But what the heck's going on in Dallas? What are they doing so wrong? Can we get rid of the coach? What's going on with the quarterback? And the Yankees are like that way in Major League Baseball. You beat them, you sweep them, you embarrass them. People are going to talk. Twins did not sweep. They won two out of the three, but it's leaving a lot of people to question what's going on in New York and how concerned should they be. Here's ESPN's Buster Olney.
Aaron Judge, the captain who really never publicly criticizes his teammates, came out last week and in very muted terms say, you know, I've seen a little bit of a lack of focus, which for Aaron Judge, who thinks so carefully about his answers, that was like him screaming, like, we got a problem here. Then over the weekend, they face the Minnesota Twins, who have, through history, been their Washington Generals, and they lose to them. So, you know, as we go forward, the concern is real. This is not merely a blip. This is a concern. They have to start playing better.
And that's Buster Olney on the New York Yankees. Twins win yesterday 6-1. Their new record, 44-47. Other finals across Major League Baseball. White Sox win against the Guardians 7-6. Stiff arming a little bit of room at the top of the division. Elsewhere, Cubbies back on the right track. 6-4 victory over St. Louis with a 50-40 record. Cubbies still in the mix in the NL Central. Other finals, Kansas City over Philly 5-2. Detroit beat Texas in Arlington 6-3. Rockies win over the Giants 7-6. And Milwaukee still very hot 55-33. Brewers win in Arizona against the Diamondbacks 3-2. Today and tonight in Major League Baseball, Twins are off. We'll see the Phillies visit the Royals at 1:10 this afternoon. Brewers at Cardinals 6:45. Rockies and the Dodgers at 9:10. Doug Glanville, are the Dodgers the best team you've seen all year?
They are. I mean, and the thing is, what sometimes gets forgotten is they are just as injured as every other team. You know, a lot of teams say, well, we're missing this guy. They're missing Will Smith, Blake Snell, Tyler Glasnow. I mean, they're missing all kinds of people. Edwin Diaz. And they're just still going as if nothing's, you know, happened. They're still the best team in baseball, and those guys will eventually come back, and then what? You're just going to deal with a real juggernaut. So they just win through their depth, and they're not necessarily all star players that are doing the job, but they find ways, and that's what makes them so dangerous. So they're going to be tough to stop, but you know, the fact is, as good as they were last year, they were still one out away and 1 second away from losing that World Series. So that's how tough the game is.
And that's Doug Glanville on the Dodgers. Next opportunity to see them tonight at home against the Rockies, a 9:10 go time. In the WNBA yesterday, Fever beat Vegas in Vegas 84-68. Kelsey Mitchell had 27. Indiana is now 12-8, while Vegas slips down to 15-6. Tonight in the WNBA, Sun visiting the Lynx, a 7 o'clock go time. Minnesota heavy favorite, 13.5 point favorite this morning, courtesy of DraftKings Sportsbook. Over to the NBA. We got a big-time gift over the prolonged 4th of July break. That is that LeBron James has said, yes, I'm coming back. No, I'm not coming back to the Lakers. Here are some options, courtesy of Tim McMahon, on the next landing spot for LeBron James.
Where do you think he goes is like the first question that people ask each other around the league. I'm out here at Salt Lake City Summer League, and I can't tell you how many times I asked that question or I heard that question. And look, Cleveland is considered the favorite. People are just connecting dots here. This isn't based on intel. This is based on the speculation game. But there's a storyline in it. You know, LeBron's in his hometown of Akron, hanging out with his high school teammates, including one, Brandon Weems, who is a front office executive for the Cavaliers right now. Now, there is a belief that there are other teams, kind of the wild card teams, the Sixers, the Timberwolves, the Nuggets, that feel like they have legitimate chances. And the Nuggets are an especially intriguing situation for the simple fact that they have a three-time MVP in Nikola Jokic. They have the proven core of a championship team. LeBron does have relationships with people in the building, including at the top of the building, Josh Kroenke, the chairman, the day-to-day ownership presence. You know, Jared Dudley was a championship teammate of his with the Los Angeles Lakers. He's now an assistant coach there. Peyton Watson, a restricted free agent, also represented by Rich Paul. That's an interesting little dance. The Clippers also have interest in him, by the way. But again, imagine LeBron and Joker, two of the most brilliant basketball minds of all time, sharing the same team.
Yeah, it's certainly something you could imagine, and is a good landing spot there in Mile High for LeBron James. Another question people might be worried about or interested in the answer to is, when will we see LeBron make a decision? When will we see teams coming calling for the future Hall of Famer? Bobby Marks on saying, I wouldn't be in a hurry here.
I don't think there is a timeline. It's not holding up as much business as in prior years. Yes, Cleveland would like to sign James Harden, and I think Denver would like to have some clarity with Peyton Watson, and certainly Draymond Green in Golden State, who's, you know, free agent. All those guys, the Watson situation is a little bit up in the air, but all those guys will be back and everything. And Miami's holding on to roster spots. I think it's a matter of just kind of, you know, having a sense whether it be midweek or the end of the week. I would be stunned if it lingered past the weekend and everything like that. But, you know, LeBron's on his own timeline, and when he makes the decision, we'll be all ready to go.
And that's Bobby Marks of ESPN. In case you missed it over the weekend, Chase Briscoe was your winner on the NASCAR circuit race there in Chicagoland Motor Speedway, and a return for the NASCAR circuit there in Joliet, Illinois. Next up, the race will be at Atlanta Sunday night, 6 o'clock coverage on TNT and HBO Max. And there is not a lot of NFL news to get to over the week absence for yours truly, the long holiday weekend, but this was too good not to inject into the scorecard here. Here's Chris Canty talking about a quarterback that nobody has on their MVP list as a possible MVP candidate.
If you think back to where the New Orleans Saints were a year ago, we were questioning whether or not anybody would want to take that job when they had a vacancy as their head coach. And now we're looking at the New Orleans Saints, and we're talking about the job that Kellen Moore did, his name being included in Coach of the Year conversations, even though he was on a 6-win team. But then also we're talking about a quarterback that wasn't a first-round pick having an opportunity to win the majority of the games that he started this season. So I do think that Tyler Shuck has it teed up for him in a very unique way that we don't see a lot of second-year quarterbacks have.
There you go. Chris Canty is on the Tyler Shuck MVP train as of this morning. For reference, he's got the 29th best odds. That's probably a little high. I'm not hating on Tyler Shuck. I think a lot of us, I'll say I was, were a little wrong on Tyler Shuck. I thought he was too old, too raw to be really darn good. I wasn't even sure he was going to start a game last year in New Orleans, but he proved a lot of people wrong. Had a nice little season, could get a lot better this year, but I'm not so sure about MVP if the Saints are still going to be middling around in that awful, putrid, yucky division of the NFC South unless they win the division by a sizable margin, and Shuck is the reason why. Even if all that happens, I would be surprised if Tyler Shuck would be in the MVP conversation. Right now, he's got identical odds to Bryce Young, Malik Willis, and Aaron Rodgers. That feels a little bit high for Tyler Shuck. Frankly, that being said, they could still win the division, have a nice year, supplement and show some growth here for New Orleans. MVP, though, I'm out on Tyler Shuck, at least for 2026. That's all for now. Out of the National Football League, had to squeeze that in. On the PGA Tour, Chris Gauthier was your winner of the John Deere Classic over the weekend, 20 under par. Next up, a event that Gauthier won last year, the Genesis Scottish Open, running Thursday through Sunday. A reminder, the Open is coming up next week. Wimbledon continuing on your TV right now. Madison Keys trailing Noskova from Czechia. It's 4-6-2-3. Set number 2 live on ESPN. And then let's get right to it. The World Cup, where yesterday we had two really darn great matches. Norway beat Brazil 2-1. That game, that match was scoreless until the 79th minute yesterday. Norway better than Brazil 2-1 in game one of the day. Game two was a classic. England over Mexico 3-2. Jude Bellingham had two first half goals for Team England. They're moving on. Mexico eliminated. Today at the World Cup, we'll see Portugal take on Spain. Battle of heavy hitters, 2 o'clock on Fox, where España is a -110 favorite. USA meeting Belgium tonight, 7 o'clock on Fox. Team USA +145, a favorite to win as well. But we got the biggest of big news this morning, that Flo Balogun's red card, which was a sticking point, literally sticks to you. You can't play the rest of the game, and you're out the next game. So sorry, figure your way around it. That red card, which there was no review process, no challenge process, no process until the last 24, 48 hours, I guess, for somebody to call and say, hey, please review this. Thanks so much. That's what Team USA, that's what the United States in de facto did. And Flo Balogun's red card is coming off. It is going to be suspended. He is going to have it rescinded for a year. He'll serve the suspension later on sometime, I guess, in international play. More details on that in a moment. There's a lot of opinions out there. Here's the first. Alejandro Moreno on Team USA and saying this would not have happened to any other nation.
Do you think it would have happened had it been a Belgian player? Mm. Had it been Kevin De Bruyne, one of their key players, if he had gone through the same thing, would that red card have been reversed? And the answer to me is unequivocally no. Historically, this has not happened. And so it looks like preferential treatment. It looks like the United States are benefiting from it because they're the host country, because they're the United States. And that's not the image that you want from this World Cup. The United States on their own as a team on the field, they've proven to be a very competitive team. And it seems like they're getting help from somewhere else. And it's not the look that you would want for this team. It's not the look that this team deserves.
All right, there you go. So Team USA, you could say some people were feeling bad for us. No, they weren't. They were not feeling bad about Flo Balogun getting a red card, which I will be clear here. I've got eyes, I've got ears, and you guys know I have an opinion. That was a horrifically bad red call in the win over Bosnia-Herzegovina. Flo Balogun did not intentionally do that. That was a bang-bang play. You could throw a yellow up if you wanted, but a red card in that moment, latter stages of the game, out for the rest of the game, out for the next game, to the best player or second or third best player at worst on our squad, really hurts your feelings. I was talking to Cousins over the weekend, 4th of July celebration. Man, I'm fired up. This is so fun. But man, that Flo Balogun red card does put a little chink in our armor. We'll see if we're up for it. I think we can take Belgium regardless. And that was a beating of the chest, chip on the shoulder, us against the world, U.S. against the world moment. And now everything's pointing back at us. You know, we're already an underdog. We're carving out a spot in this tournament. And now we're getting what some would say is preferential treatment. Danny Davies is saying that FIFA is setting a very dangerous first-time precedent by suspending the red card for Team USA star Flo Balogun.
FIFA dangerously set himself a precedent here, because if something is going to be overturned, normally in a normal football situation, a decision is overturned in 24 hours. This has taken, what, 3 days, I think, and they've finally come to a decision 24 hours before the USA play again. So the whole thing doesn't look great. The optics don't look great. And the fact that FIFA haven't given any rationale, any explanation as to why they've overturned it, you know, it's just causing a big confusion. It doesn't feel right. The optics don't look great. And in terms, it doesn't add up to their actual competition rules in terms of overturning a red card offence. So I think FIFA owe it to the football world to actually come out and give an explanation and rationale as to how they've reached this outcome and how they've overturned the red card, when in their own competition rules, this isn't actually allowed.
There you go. That is a very strong opinion from Andy Davies about the precedent here. And for reference, again, I think it was a bad call, bad red card. But the fact that we're playing soccer, playing football to most of the world, we're playing within the structured confines and the rules of FIFA regulated events. There's not a challenge process. Yes, it was a bad call. We'll suck it up. We're America. We'll find a way, and we're going to give Belgium hell. I hope we do. I hope we still do. But frankly, it doesn't sit right with me either that suddenly we get treatment that is without any sort of precedent. And if you don't believe me, since red cards and yellow cards were introduced in World Cup play in 1970, how many red cards have been suspended? How many red cards have been challenged and overturned? The answer is none. Zero. So while I am beating my chest and a red-blooded American, I want us to win. I want us to win the whole darn thing. And I want us to get the call right. We got the call right. No doubt about it. But we're the first country to ever get this sort of treatment or a call. You don't think there's other countries in the tournament that have red cards they don't agree with? And they can't call it up and figure out a way to get it rescinded or suspended and get that little bit of what people view and feel? And if this was going on with another country, especially a country we were playing, would you feel that way? It's It's a very delicate topic, no doubt about it. I'm glad that Flo Balogun's playing. We need him. He's amazing. He's been a stone cold stunner throughout the World Cup so far. Many big moments. We're going to have them. But this is setting up a no-win scenario for Team USA that I fear is not going to be great. Because if we win this thing today, and if we win another game, it's going to be, but they got that. You know, that happened there. First time ever. I'm going to go ahead and put an asterisk next to Team USA instead of us rallying to meet the moment. And yes, the call was bad. I'm not saying the call wasn't bad. But it just doesn't feel right. Today, the news from the World Cup that Team USA is having a suspension of the red card for Flo Balogun on our home soil. Team USA will be in Seattle tonight with Flo Balogun for now. 7 o'clock tonight on Fox, where Team USA plus 145 on the money line. Let's dive right into your ReliaBank headlines of the day right here in Sioux Falls. Middle of last week, the news we were off the air for, we're sharing now. Former Augustana All-American Erica Butte has been named the next head coach of the Augustana volleyball program. Butte returns to Augie following her first full season as a head coach at Bemidji State in 2025. She earned her first coaching position after serving as an assistant on the Beaver volleyball staff during the 2024 season. In her lone season as an assistant, she moved into the interim head coach position with 7 games to go in the regular season. A native of Alden, Minnesota, Butte had a decorated collegiate career as a student athlete for the Vikings. She was named American Volleyball Coaches Association All-America Honorable Mention and a CSC All-Academic All-America Third Team member, was a dominant player in the NSIC, 2-time NSIC Libero of the Year, 4-time All-NSIC honoree, and a 2023 NSIC Outstanding Senior of the Year. Welcome, Erica Butte, the next head volleyball coach of the Augustana Vikings. We'll look to chat with the coach. Intro conversation later on in the weeks ahead. Well, big news for the Jackrabbit athletic programs. The South Dakota State Jackrabbit wrestling team will square off on the mat with the University of North Carolina in a wrestling duel that'll come your way Friday, December 18th at the Sanford Pentagon. Ticket sales and broadcast info will be determined at a later date. South Dakota State head coach Damian Hahn and North Carolina head coach Rob Cole previously worked together at Cornell University in Ithaca, New York, where Coach Hahn served as an assistant for Coach Cole from 2006 to 2013. So some familiarity, maybe some bad blood there. We'll see. Lot on display, Sanford Pentagon, Friday, December 18th. More details at gojacks.com. Other headlines to get to as we dive into your ReliaBank headlines of the day. 2 months away from the start of the Coyote football season, USD has announced their 6-game home promotional schedule inside the Dakota Dome. August 29th, the home opener against Central Connecticut State will be Ag Appreciation Day. You'll also see Family Weekend on September 12th against Eastern Washington. D-Days, Dakota Days, October 3rd against Indiana State. Hall of Fame Weekend, October 10th against SIU. Also Youth Day, Senior Day, the rest of the way. Full details at GoYotes.com. Sioux Falls Canaries back on the right track as they have won 4 in a row, and they struck for 7 first inning runs yesterday, smacked 9 doubles in the game, and survived a furious rally from rival Sioux City to win 16-15 on the road. Canaries are now 24-22 and have now won a season high 4 straight games and remain 2 out of first place in the West. Birds are back in action Tuesday night at Chicago. Latest SF Canaries. .com. We touched on it briefly earlier on this segment, but Minnesota Twins all-star center fielder and fan favorite Byron Buxton is dinged up. He left Sunday's win against the Yankees following the first inning after aggravating a hip injury. Buxton reached on an infield single, was thrown out trying to steal second base on a head-first slide during a full-count pitch to Cody Clemens, who struck out. Earlier in the at-bat, Buxton attempted to steal second, but Clemens fouled off a pitch. Here is what Minnesota manager Derek Shelton had to say. He had to go hard on the ball that Ryan Weathers knocked down. Then on the second one, kind of grabbed him a little bit. So a hip aggravation. We'll keep you updated on further timeline updates for Byron Buxton. A lot of opinions out there. You got an opinion on Flo Balogun's red card that is apparently no more. Feel free to dial me up at any point during the show, 605-362-3776. We'll dive in to that debate a little bit deeper later on in hour number one. But immediately next on Mondays, we like to look back on the fun weekend, tell you what you may have missed there, but also historically, We break out the history books. What happened on this day in sports history? We start all the way back in 1887 on this day in sports history, coming up next on the Monday, July 6th edition of Overtime.
Get ESPN with the free app and online. Grab your phone or call us up on your smart device. Now let's get you back to Overtime with Bert Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO.
Right back with you, leading off the week, Monday, July 6th edition of Overtime. We like to look back on this day in sports history. We'll get to that here in just a moment, but the remainder of the show, immediately next, we'll be checking in on Major League Baseball, setting the stage for the rest of July, All-Star break around the corner. Where do the Minnesota Twins stack up right now in terms of total odds, division odds? Can they win the division? Can they go to the postseason? Can they win a postseason series? We'll dive into those odds, some storylines, standings, and more right around the corner on a Monday. But first things first, on this day in sports history, to lead off a busy week on Overtime.
History repeats itself.
Little roller up along first, behind the bag, it gets through Buckner.
Well, sometimes.
Do you believe in miracles? Yes!
In the world of sports, there are moments that are fleeting.
And Barnes, hit one high, pitch is deep,
and some that live forever.
In the end zone, it is caught for the win!
It's time for Bert to deliver those moments that happened on this day in sports history.
On this day in sports history, July the 6th, we can dive all the way back to the 1800s, 1887, with Wimbledon. Women's tennis, Lottie Dodd became the youngest ever Wimbledon champ on this day, 15 years old. 285 days as well. Lottie Dodd, a champion, defeating defending champion Blanche Bingley 6-2, 6-0 on this day in 1887. Other news to get to, items to get to on this day in sports history. 1929 was a very lucrative day for the St. Louis Cardinals. They set a Major League Baseball run record with 28 runs on 28 hits in a 28-6 win over the Phillies on this day in 1933 was the first ever Major League Baseball All-Star Game. On this July 6th, the American League won 4-2 at Comiskey Park in Chicago, and Babe Ruth, the Wimpy Deer, hit his first All-Star home run. 1941, New York Yankees team unveiled a monument to former captain Lou Gehrig in center field at Yankee Stadium. Future Hall of Famer passed away the previous month. Back in 1941, fast forward now to 1980, Major League Baseball's Philadelphia Phillies starter Steve Carlton struck out seven Cardinals to reach 2,836 career strikeouts, the most by a left-handed pitcher in the history of Major League Baseball. Changing of the guard in Denver. On this day in sports history, all the way back in 2000, real estate developer Stan Kroenke announced the acquisition of the Denver Nuggets, Colorado Avalanche, and the Pepsi Center for $450 million. That was a bargain at the time, bargain now. Kroenke, also the owner currently of the Los Angeles Rams. On this day in 2000, he scooped up the Nuggets, Avs, and Pepsi Center for just a few pennies. In 2000, 2019, Clippers acquired two NBA megastars in one day in a busy start to July. Just 7 years ago, Kawhi Leonard came over from Toronto in free agency. Paul George from OKC for an unprecedented trade bounty of players and picks. And in 2020, on this day in sports history, Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes agreed to the largest contract for an athlete in sports history, inking a 12-year deal 6 years ago that could end up being worth $503 million. That contract is the same one that they just tinkered with recently, punching it out a little bit further into the future as Mahomes continues to be worth every single penny. Birthdays are pretty light on July 6th, historically, in the sports world. Back in 1980, Pau Gasol was born in Barcelona, Spain on this day. The Spanish Basketball Hall of Fame forward, title winner a bunch of times, two times overall, six-time All-Star, NBA Rookie of the Year, 2002 with the Memphis Grizzlies. Pau Gasol celebrating a birthday today. Back in 1980. 1981, a free agency kind of guy, a guy that was part of the Dream Team in Philadelphia we referenced a couple years ago, is celebrating a birthday. Nnamdi Asamoah. Remember that name? The cornerback who cut his teeth as a Raider ended up going on to play a couple different other places, including with the Philadelphia Eagles. He was born on this day in Lafayette, Louisiana in 1981. And lastly, born in Salisbury, North Carolina, the home of Cheer Wine. If you know, you know. Non-alcoholic, just a incredibly syrupy cherry-flavored soda that is definitely worth a try. Cheer Wine, mark it down. Zion Williamson was born in Salisbury, North Carolina on this day in the year 2000. That is on this day in sports history on a Monday. Let's talk baseball. It is summer after all. And right now, in the American League Central, we got a very fun fight to the halfway point, fight to the finish line, if you will. The Chicago White Sox are looking to go worst to first. They're in first right now by a full game after beating Cleveland yesterday. Their record is 47-42. Guardians second in the division, 47-44. Minnesota third, just four games back. With over 90 games gone, Minnesota is 44-47. Then stiff-arming away Detroit, they're 3.5 games better than the Tigers and 7.5 games better than the Royals, who are this year's cellar dweller so far in the Central. Your other division leaders and runner-ups right now, American League East is owned by the Rays, 4 games better than the Yankees. Mariners are 1.5 games up on the Rangers in the West, and that is an equally competitive AL West as we're seeing right now in the American League Central. Over to the National League, the Atlanta Braves are one of the teams to beat. They're the top team in the NL East, better than Philly by 3 games. Milwaukee leads the Central by 6 over the Cubbies, 7.5 game lead over the Cardinals. And then in the National League West, no doubt about it, Dodgers, team to beat, 59-32. They have a 14-game margin from first place to second place in the National League West right now. Dodgers over the Diamondbacks and Padres, who have similar records, 44-45 right now. But that is the big line of demarcation. Dodgers are basically already in the driver's seat for the National League, in the division, etc. As we dive into a look at the odds right now. In the divisions, I want to see if they even have those odds still posted. NL West, the Dodgers are minus 20,000 to win the division. They're going to knock that thing up before long. Padres, then the Diamondbacks, Giants and Rockies in the West. Central right now is Brewers and Cubs, two-horse race, of course, heavily leaning the way of Milwaukee, minus 475. In the East, it's the Braves division to win, minus 175, and the Phillies plus 145. Nice competitive division in the East. And then, of course, let's touch on the AL Central. Where we stand right now, the Guardians are your favorite, although they're in second place, plus 115. White Sox plus 160, and the Twins are right there, plus 600. And all the opinions out there, is this team good enough? Can they win the division? Can they win a postseason series, playoff series? Is all dependent upon what the heck happens ahead of the trade deadline. Do the Twins sit on their hands? Do they sell the farm like last year? They can't do that again. That would be very difficult to replicate. But they could sell two or three or four pieces and tick everybody off. Or they could buy one or two or three pieces. Buy a couple bargain bin players on the market that can give them a little bit more juice. As we turn the page into the month of August, deadline is at the very beginning of August, and Minnesota could inspire a lot of confidence if they either sit on their hands and make one acquisition or make two or three. Why not? Go for it. Minnesota right now, if you look at the odds, might be a little higher than you think in terms of World Series, winning the division. They're third in divisional odds. And Minnesota right now stacks up as the 18th best odds to win the World Series. This team's not winning the World Series this year, barring a miracle or some crazy acquisition that we've never seen before and it works out, comes up aces. But it is something to be noted that many people, myself included, and a lot of you Twins fans out there were saying, Yeah, you know, last year at the deadline, they ticked me off. This year's going to be a joke. Twins are going to stink. They do not stink this year. This has been a treat of a season so far, and I'm optimistic about where this team is going. Did not think those words are going to come out of my mouth at any point this year, but Minnesota is right around 500 right now, in striking distance to keep you entertained all the way through the summer and into the fall, and I like what's cooking up under Derek Shelton. We'll see. Are they buyers? Are they sellers? Are they sitting on their hands? Or maybe they make a couple additions, maybe one notable subtraction to fund the additions. We'll see about what Minnesota does. But frankly, they have got a warming iron to strike this year around the deadline. Again, that deadline coming up at the beginning of next month. Minnesota, third in the division, third in divisional odds right now, but certainly a team to be proud of here in 2026. We'll dive into a break here. Come back talking about the World Cup. The sights, the sounds, the storylines, the boom, boom, row of Norway continues to live on. They keep on moving in the World Cup. We'll dive in to that story. Unfortunate injury news for Team England. And of course, Flo Balogun back better than ever, maybe, in Seattle tonight against Team Belgium. That's a 7 o'clock go time on Fox. We fire up the debate cannons. You got a strong opinion. We want to hear it in the nicest way possible. 605-362-3776. Flo Balogun, Team USA, meeting Belgium tonight. 7 o'clock on Fox. We talk World Cup and more coming up next on this Monday edition of Overtime.
Overtime is in the middle of your workday. Unwrap your sandwich and get caught up with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Right back with you on this Monday, July 6th edition of Overtime. I'm curious about everybody's 4th of July holiday. How much fun did you have? What was the coolest thing you did? I got to tell you what, I had a great extended time off. We were out in Wisconsin, ended up going on a trip down memory lane to the Wisconsin Dells. I've not been to Noah's Ark Water Park since I was probably 8 or 9 years old. And I love the place so much because, frankly, it's just about exactly the same as it was back in 1997, 1998. It was amazing to see my kids there. Was awesome. Herding cats, absolutely. But worth every penny. Juice that was worth the squeeze. Amazing trip across the board with some friends and family. Emphasis on the family. And certainly time well spent out there in America's Dairyland. Let's talk about the World Cup now as we dive into the final segment on a Monday edition of hour number one of Overtime. Team England is moving on. They survived a raucous Azteca Stadium atmosphere and a red card early in the second half to prevail against past co-host Mexico 3-2 in a thrilling World Cup round of 16 clash in Mexico City on Sunday. In a game that had almost everything, according to ESPN.com, including an hour-long weather delay, the teams, the crowd combined to produce one of the games of the tournament before England clinched a spot in the quarterfinals for a third consecutive World Cup. They got going early, 2 goals in the first half from Jude Bellingham, another from team captain and star Harry Kane, and England became the first team to defeat Mexico in this year's World Cup at the famed Azteca, and only the third team to win there in 89 total competitive matches as they continue to seek a second World Cup title. And first since 1966, England will now take on Erling Haaland and Norway in Miami Gardens, Florida on Saturday for a place in the semifinals. Harry Kane saying postgame, "It was a crazy game. We had to find something. All the occasion, the team, everything against us, we found a way." Well, everything was not amazing for Team England, especially with this news. Jordan Henderson suffered a serious wrist injury after falling in the celebrations following England's win over Mexico last night. Very ugly video. Do not watch it if you're queasy. Got the warning out there in a hurry for you. A few minutes after full time, England headed over to their bank of fans behind one of the goals and joined them for the now traditional rendition of Wonderwall by Oasis. During those celebrations, Henderson was injured. Dan Byrne, an English defender, said Henderson fell over one of the advertising boards. Television pictures showed Henderson being stretchered off, and it was not a pretty sight. Frankly, just looked like moisture. Looked like somebody had exited that earlier and maybe some sweat from a hand or a wrist was on there. And Jordan Henderson grabbed that. You could see him slide off and brace with his hand. Unfortunately, was not a pretty injury. And now Jordan Henderson, a serious wrist injury. We'll keep you updated on that details as we move forward on that big injury for Team England. An emotional Neymar said his career with Brazil had, quote, finished after his team's World Cup exit against Norway in the round of 16 yesterday. The 34-year-old scored a late consolation goal via penalty. Team Brazil lost 2-1 thanks to Erling Haaland's two goals. More on that in a moment. And this is the earliest World Cup exit for Team Brazil in 36 years, 1990. Last time they exited this early, Neymar slumped to the ground in tears after the final whistle at MetLife Stadium in New Jersey. Before being consoled by teammates, I tried. Now it's over. Started here and finished here. Neymar made his debut for Brazil against the United States in a friendly MetLife Stadium back in August of 2010, scoring his first international goal. And apparently, international play over for Neymar, who gave it a go through numerous injuries and slowdowns to participate and excel in this year's World Cup. Now, lastly here, let's talk about Flo Balogun and the news of the day for Team USA. And there's a lot of opinions out there. I welcome yours, of course. If we have varying opinions, I be kind, you be kind. Let's all get along. Everybody love everybody. We can argue about it. 605-362-3776. If you missed the game last week, Team USA found a way to win against Bosnia-Herzegovina. In that game, Flo Balogun, Team USA's best or one of their best players, stepped on the ankle of another player in a bang-bang play. To me, it was pretty fast, and it was a pretty bad call. Not a yellow card, but a red card. And if you're a soccer novice like me, you got to do some Googling and figure out, okay, what does that mean? Well, what it means is that Flo Balogun's out the rest of the game. Okay, that's doable. That's feasible. But an international play, like this World Cup, it means that he's also out the next game. This is like super targeting for you college football fans. Flo Balogun out the rest of the game, out of the entirety of next game. So the dust settles. Most people agree, international or otherwise. Even the biggest Team USA haters were probably like, yeah, I'm glad he's out, but man, that was a bad call, let me tell you. It did not seem like an intentional maneuver. You can argue, yes, it's a penalty, Bert. No doubt about it. Is it that big of a penalty? I don't think so. So it's a bad call. And then the dust settles 3-4 days later. And now this morning, we have a effective suspension of the red card. But it's effectively a rescission of the red card, which means Flo Balogun's going to play. So, Bert, what are you upset about? Why are you being this way? Why aren't you happy? Team USA has Flo Balogun back in the lineup for tonight's matchup against Belgium and an opportunity to continue to advance in the tournament. I'm not mad that they got the call right. I'm just a little bit mixed opinion on the fact that we are creating our own rules for Team USA here. And frankly, there's a lot of different layers to the onion, and it is a stinky onion today because every other nation, whether they've already exited the World Cup or they're still in it or facing us tonight like Team Belgium, is ticked off here, incredulous, because this doesn't happen. And I'm glad they got the call right. That's nice. I would have preferred they got it right in the moment, but they didn't. They put up the red card, Flo Balogun out that game, out the next game. No questions asked. That's international play. Same rules apply for everybody. But as of this morning, rules for thee, but not for me, apparently, for Team USA. I want Team USA to win this whole darn thing. I hope they wax Belgium tonight with or without Balogun in the lineup. But it just doesn't sit right with me now that we've entered a no-win scenario zone for Team USA. We win, we're public enemy number one. Persona non grata. You don't deserve to be here. You only got here because you made your own rule. And frankly, it doesn't sit right. I don't love it. Don't love the taste of this one at all. For Flo Balogun and for us for the first time. And again, I mentioned this earlier in hour one. You want to fight me on the details? You got something you want to share on the air? Fire it up. 605-362-3776. But this is the first red card suspension in the history of the World Cup since 1970. When they introduced cards, yellow and red, at World Cup play. 1970. And today we get a gift that Flo Balogun's going to play. But did other nations have an opportunity? Could they make a phone call? Could they go ahead and call powers that be and make a request to review and supplement and ask some additional questions. You know, if this was fair game for everybody, if these were the rules, that's fine. But we're playing within the rules, and then suddenly now we are sweeping them under, and everybody very ticked off, including Belgium, whose coach Rudy Garcia said he thought it was a, quote, joke when he first heard news that suspended United States striker Phalerin Balogun was cleared to play in the round of 16 match tonight, while the Belgian Federation announced it was, quote, investigating all potential options in opposition of FIFA's stunning decision. I didn't know that the World Cup, the 5th of July, is actually the 1st of April. It's April Fool's Day, Garcia said at a news conference on Sunday. He added that the Federation's lengthy statement, which highlighted the unprecedented nature of FIFA's decision, as well as how it runs counter to the guidelines FIFA had put out before the tournament regarding automatic suspensions for any player receiving a red card, was not only about protecting the Belgian team. Garcia said, "We are not defending the national team or federation. We are defending football." Hard to argue that. You want the same rules for every team, same rules for every referee. Uniformity goes a long way. That's the point of sports. When you get outside of that uniformity, or you get a little meandering of the rules for benefit any team, any nation, it doesn't sit right. And everybody, it seems, most everybody in opposition to Team USA getting the boost, the Balogun boost today over this suspended red card. Interesting maneuvering today for Team USA. Frankly, good news for them. But the rest of the soccer community, football community, not a fan of FIFA bending the rules that we didn't know were bendable or pliable at all. And here we are. We'll dive in a little bit deeper with some more commentary, audio clips coming up with your headlines and highlights in hour number two. But before we go to break, let's take a look at those odds. Where to begin the tournament, it was a two-horse race between France and Spain. Now we've opened it up quite a bit. France is still your odds-on favorite, plus 170. Argentina, they've looked fantastic, plus 425. England, plus 520. They've had a few chinks in the armor, but overall have looked really strong. Spain, also similar to England, couple speed bumps, couple hiccups, but pretty darn solid, plus 550. That's your final four. That's your projection. Those are the teams that are heavily favored to be in the mix when we get towards the end of this thing. Then you get your bargain bin squads, Portugal and Norway, plus 1,400, plus 1,700, respectively. Colombia, Morocco, USA, then Belgium, Switzerland, and Egypt. The longest of long shots remaining right now in the field. Those odds courtesy of DraftKings Sportsbook. Team USA, ninth best odds to advance and win the World Cup this year. Certainly a small favorite tonight against Belgium. Bigger than they would have been with the return of Flo Balogun. Certainly a hot-button topic that has a lot of people fired up and ready to rumble on a Monday, July 6th edition of the show. That's hour one. When we come back, headlines and highlights on the way. More commentary on Flo Balogun's availability for tonight against Belgium. 7 o'clock on Fox. Latest NFL news, NBA free agency, trade reactions, and so much more. Locked up, locked and loaded. Hour number two coming up next on a Monday edition of Overtime on your Sioux Falls sports leader. It's ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO.